On today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, we're going to talk about reporting, the normal approach. If you better tell me or else. And we're going to talk about some better ways to grow reporting within your organization. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at the Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Man, I think I'm dying. And not really. That's probably not the right place to start this. Let me not scare the crap out of everybody out there. I'm whining and I'm complaining because I have the crud. Yeah, I have the crud. It feels like I'm dying. We're all technically dying, but I don't think I'm dying anytime soon, but it feels like it. I'm whining and complaining because I haven't gotten sick in like 2 years. I had a close call once. I share with a lot of you, you know, that I spend a good amount of time traveling, and part of that travel is the travel ritual, like the pre and post travel thing, which involves me consuming copious amounts of vitamins, like Emergency, and I take AG1, which is like a greens powder, and I take this and that, and all the other stuff that the doctors tell me to take. I do get kind of I'm not like obsessive about those things, but as you get older, I'm really curious about what my blood work says and trying to make sure that it stays where it needs to be. So I do those things with some frequency, and then on top of that, like, part of this travel ritual is I get IVs, like, usually every time before I take a trip, I will get one. When I'm traveling every single week, I don't know that I get them every single week, but I get them at least like 3 times a month, like pretty stinking close to it. Now, I've got a bit of some privilege there around that. I've got a benefit because, as many of you know, my amazing, amazing significant other has an IV business on top of all the stuff that he already does, you know, as a healthcare leader in nursing and organizations that deal with healthcare kind of stuff. That's what he does. He is a healthcare leader in these large facilities. But he has a bit of a side business. It's not a bit of a side business. It's like a real deal side business, and he's stinking great at it. So I have access. I have access to free IVs, at least as often as I can convince him to giving me those. So I usually don't get sick. Like, I've got to say, whether all those travel rituals really work or not, or it's just, you know, placebo effect, I don't know. But I tend to think that they work. I did have a close call. I dropped into Arkansas for an event. I got in a little late. I had that feeling, and you know that feeling, the crap. I know what this is. This is not good. I've got to be up super early, and I feel weird. Yeah, the weird one where it's like, what is this? What? Oh, I know what this is. I'm coming down to something. Yeah, I pride myself, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I pride myself in not canceling events. If I say I'm going to be somewhere, I'm going to be there. Damn it. Yeah, I'm going to be there. I build in margin into my schedule. I fly the day before. I leave the day after. Like, I do all the stuff that, like, good best practices that we know. Like, things go wrong when you're traveling. Let's try to make sure that we can still make the event happen even if things go wrong. Sick is a weird one, though. Sick is a weird one. So I'm in Arkansas. I'm trying to go to bed. I can't sleep. I've got this weird feeling. I'm getting those cold chills. I'm getting the cold pricklies instead of the warm and fuzzies. And I don't know. I think it's probably the cold pricklies and the warm fuzzies and the pukies, like, all at once. Like, it's like, is this bad? And then I finally got to sleep. I woke up the next morning and I didn't feel like $1 million, but I felt okay. And I credit that to some of those rituals. And the biggest one, I think, being those constant IV vitamin infusion things. At the very least, they give me a little zip. They give me a little pep in my step. They make me feel kind of a bit better, which is kind of cool. And instant hydration. Like, who can complain about that? So I tell you all that to tell you that if my voice crackles or I cackle or I have to cut out of here to hack and cough for a few minutes and come back and tell you, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut off mid-sentence. That is the reason. Now, I think a lot of this has to do, me coming down with the crud, with the fact that I'm cutting back on coffee. Who would have ever thought that you would see the day And it's not that I think coffee is like bad or evil. That's definitely not the case. I mean, over on the Sideshow, we do the cold brew review. Like, I'm not stopping drinking coffee. I think coffee is probably actually kind of good for you. It's just that over time, I tend to drink more and more and more and more. And then I know that I'm drinking too much because I feel extremely fatigued. The coffee does less. I feel extremely tired. But I can't sleep. And so I know I'm at that point where it's like I'm having to cut back. So I'm in the process of cutting back a little bit. What I mean by cutting back is I'm going down to one reasonably sized cold brew per day or a couple normal sized coffee cups, which I've got a nice coffee cup here, a nice hot coffee, which is strange for me. But it is the season. It is the season here in Phoenix. It is nice and cool. It's a balmy like 70 degrees today. I was busy this morning. I didn't have time to go get any cold brew, and I didn't have any in the fridge. And I broke out the old holiday blend Starbucks Nespresso pods. And here we go. Let's a little ASMR for you there. And it's pretty stinking good. I like it. But I think I caught the crud because I'm cutting back on caffeine. Yeah, I think. That's it. But with all of that kind of out of the way, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here. Whether you're a first time, hey, who the heck is this lunatic on here? Let me see what this is all about. Or you've been around since day one. It means the absolute world to me that you take time out of your day to hang out with me and chat about human and organizational performance. Really, really. Thank you for being here. Before we jump into today's topic of reporting, do me a favor. Head over to the website, www.thehopner.com. Follow along on all things where you can follow along. LinkedIn, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I think I've got a Facebook. I've been having trouble getting into it, so hopefully it's not hacked. I don't know. We'll see. And on and on and on. And YouTube. YouTube in particular. I've been trying to make as many of these episodes video as possible, at least when I'm solo. Giving you some clips, if not the full episode. I've not quite got that down yet, but especially when I have guests on, I'm trying my best to make sure that we have video versions of those episodes available over on YouTube. So if you like them, love them, you got to have more of them. The best way that you can do that is vote with your eyeballs. Go watch them, like them, share them. It helps an absolute ton. Speaking of helping, if you want to support what we've got going on around here at the podcast and at the Hop Nerd LLC, check out the merch shop. That's a great way to do it and get some cool stuff in return for your support. thehopnerd.com/shop. We've got all kinds of neat designs over there that do not suck. Speaking of cool merch, I'm actually wearing, and speaking of cool merch and that the season has cooled down, I am wearing a Punk Rock Safety hoodie. How cool is that? I love what those guys have going on over at Punk Rock Safety. I was over on their show more than a few months back now, but if you haven't checked it out, again, YouTube, you can go watch it. They're just a blast. They're just an absolute blast. And so I find myself podcasting with you in the normal Arizona uniform. And what the normal Arizona uniform is this. It is this. It is a hooded sweatshirt. I am wearing gym shorts and I am wearing my slip-on Vans shoes, which is the classier side of that because the normal is flip-flops. Yeah, so I'm a bit classed up today. Oh, and I can't forget my normal hat. You got to rock the hat. Coffee. I was telling you, I've got to have it right now. It's not just a bit of a shtick. It's like literally I don't want to hack and cough into the microphone. So thank you for bearing with me as I have the crud. Last but not least, I do want to let you know a couple other things. I'm going to be in North Carolina when this episode comes out. I think I'm in North Carolina right now. I'm pretty sure. So I'm recording this the day before Halloween. I am pumped for Halloween. It is like the ultimate dad holiday. Any opportunity where I get to open up the garage, drag out my garage chairs into the driveway and utilize my dad fridge, I am here for it. It's just a blast to see all the kids having fun. It's cool to see all the adults having fun, all the trick-or-treaters coming by, picking up all the candy that we'll be handing out. And the adults, too. We've got thanks for our adult trick-or-treaters as well. They are in the cooler. So if you are through my neighborhood, we will hook you up. But I'm in North Carolina when this comes out. Then I'm doing some virtual stuff. Then I'm off to Wisconsin. Then I'm doing some virtual stuff. And then I got some other stuff throughout the rest of the year. My calendar gets to be a blur after about 3 or 4 weeks out. But if you need a hand, I do have some time. I do have some time throughout the remainder of the year. Not a ton, But if you need that help, I do travel in December. I know that December is kind of the month that doesn't exist for a lot of us, but I will come out of the house. I promise. If you need help. Now, I'm not traveling on the holidays. I don't do that kind of stuff, and neither should you. You should be home, spend the time with the folks that matter the most. But I travel all the way up until about the week of Christmas, and then I take a little bit of time off to take a nap. So if you need a bit of help, I would love to be that person that gives you that help. If you want to work with me, let me know, thehopnerd@gmail.com, or you can cruise over and check out all the stuff that I tend to help with over at thehopnerd.com. You can see services. You can submit the chat form, the contact form. You can even just throw time on the calendar, book a consult. Just click that, and then there you go. And while you're over there, make sure you sign up for the mailing list. Scroll to the bottom of the page and click join the mailing list. It's a great way to know when we have public events happening, where I'm going to be at other public events that maybe we're not putting on ourselves, but, you know, like conferences and different things where you can just go hang out. Like, those are super cool. The mailing list is the easiest way to get a hold of all of that information. I always forget to tell you about Starting Points. Check out Starting Points, the card deck. Here you go. Ready? Hear that? Nice little metal tin carrying case in our deluxe edition. The funky meeting starters come in those as well. Getting this app launched is going to be the death of me, I'm telling you. Again, I'm recording this about a week out, so I don't know. I don't know if it's available yet, but it's coming, y'all. It's coming. We will have it out sooner than later. Another ask is that if you have an Android device, if you use an Android device, let me know. Let me know, because we're looking for beta testers for the Android app. You got to have a certain amount of those before you can publish over to the Google Play Store. So I'm looking for folks. We've got about half of those slots filled, but the more the merrier. I need at least another 10 or so. And again, mo equals mo better, because if some folks don't download it, we need a little bit of margin there. So with all of that out of the way, again, thanks for being here. Let's jump right on into today's episode about reporting. I've got a rule that tells me that people have to tell me stuff or else. So that means people have to tell me stuff. What's that sound like? You know what that sounds like. That sounds like every organization's approach to reporting, like, since ever. I've got a rule that says you've got to tell me stuff or else. You better tell me stuff. I think we need to start right here with our bit of a conversation around reporting. I'm going to try to keep this one as short as possible. I try to promise that, and I never do, because my mind takes us all over the map with some of these things. But I think that's good, exploring these ideas rather than just me coming up with some bullet points to throw at you. But I think you always have to start the reporting discussion right here, whether we like it or not, And whether we have a rule that says you got to tell me stuff or else, all reporting is a personal choice. Yeah. Yeah, it's a choice that we get to make as individuals. What I'm telling you is, no matter rules, no matter pressures, no matter do this or I'll beat you, all reporting is voluntary. We have to start with that understanding. We have to understand and accept that reporting is a voluntary act. As an individual, I have a choice in the matter. I get to decide whether I'm going to tell you something or not. It's that simple. It truly is that simple. I get to decide. Now, where we tend to run into trouble with reporting in our organizations is that, that kind of tongue-in-cheek, funny, ha-ha thing that I kind of said at the beginning, tell me stuff or else, we tend to view that as the way of making people report stuff, that I just have to make it painful for you to not report. And then when they actually don't report something to me, you ready for it? You know this one. I make an example out of them. I beat one to show the rest of them that you don't want to not report stuff. Yeah, I string one person up. I tar and feather another one. I put another one over and I stretch them out on the, what do they call that thing? The medieval stretching thing. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I do that to one person very publicly to show everyone else that thou shalt report or else. Does that actually increase reporting? I don't think so. I don't think so. Because the problem that we run into is that this is a voluntary act. As we said, I have choice in the matter. And so, especially when something goes wrong, when things get a bit sideways, or maybe I see this and I go, oh, you know, I had the best of intention, but I was bending the rules a little bit and we had a pretty good close call there. Like somebody should have, could have, would have almost died, but fortunately they didn't. Nobody saw it. I could just move on with life. No one will be any wiser about this. We could just go on. When I'm thinking those things through and I'm going, but if I do report it because the company says it's the right thing to do, is it though? Is it the right thing for me? Because when I report this, I'm going to get blamed, shamed, tarred, feathered. When I'm negotiating this, where do I land? I don't think that any rule that we write on some meaningless scrap of paper or in some sacred safety manual within our organization, I don't think that even the opportunity to be maybe publicly blame, shamed, or fired for not reporting, I don't think that's enough to push me beyond my normal sense of self-preservation. If it comes down to me versus you, we pick me every time. So really, think about that. Think about that for a minute. I can report and probably get blame, shamed, or retrained 100%. Okay. Or I can not report and maybe it's 50-50. Maybe it's 80-20. Maybe it's a bit better. I can not report and take that risk and probably not get in trouble for not reporting. And so we see this. We see this play out in our organizations where, what do we call that? We call that bloody pocket syndrome, right? And we'll see this play out in our reporting in the way of really just things coming through that are too big to hide. Like, oops, somebody saw me. We've got to report this one. I can't hide this one. We've got to report this one. And on and on and on and on. Where I'm going with this is reporting is a voluntary act. The way that we influence that within our organizations is creating an environment in which people can actually report stuff. Yeah, we make that negotiation easier. That's how you get more reporting. Not by bigger sticks and juicier carrots. No, that doesn't work. That only works in the most extreme cases and more than likely just very temporarily. And in fact, we'll just make reporting less and less and less and less. The bigger the stick, the larger the carrot. The carrot's getting bigger, so we're just telling you more stuff that you want to hear. The stick's getting bigger, so we're just telling you less stuff that you really need to know but don't want to hear. Yeah, we know how those things play out. It's on us. It's on our organizations to create an environment that encourages this reporting, that makes that negotiation on the end user far easier. Far easier. We have to make it easy to report, less painful to report, less frustrating to report, less fear in reporting, because that is fear. Again, if I'm thinking about that thing and I'm going, I cut my hand, that thing is sharp, we should probably do something about that thing. But if I report this, I know what my reality is in this organization. I've seen this play out one too many times. When we report things, the person that reports things, and it's not because they reported, it's because they were unsafe. That's a fun way around that one. They get blame, shamed, retrained, fired, days off. Yeah. And if I don't report things, maybe that happens. We shouldn't have, our employees shouldn't have to have that conversation with themselves. It shouldn't be a self-preservation thing. It shouldn't be, I've got to choose between getting medical care or at the very least sharing this really important information with the organization. I've got to choose between doing that and taking the consequences, the sometimes horrific consequences of doing that, or just shutting up and going to get medical treatment on my own and the organization being none the wiser. And my chances are better on that side of things because they're probably not even going to know that it ever happened. And if they find out, I just find myself back to square one with the blame, shame, retrain, the horrific consequences. Yeah, duh. Right? Like, duh, we can see. We can see how obvious that is. People only tell you the things that you allow them to tell you. That's a good question to think about as we think about reporting within our organizations. Genuinely, truly, what do we allow people to tell us? If we freak out, break down, melt down, piss our pants every time somebody brings us something that we don't want to hear, people are going to start telling you less and less and less. If we blame, shame, and retrain, especially the overuse of blame and shame and retrain, the overuse of what we tend to call disciplinary action, every time things get a little bit sideways, we just pull out that stick. Guess what? People are going to tell us less and less and less and less. Eventually, our organizations will grow quieter and quieter. Yep. Eventually, they'll really get to where they're silent. They are absolutely silent. Now, we'll point to our spreadsheets at this point usually and say, look how great our safety performance is. I know people are telling us stuff because I have a rule that says they have to tell us or else. So damn it, I know that if things were happening, they would be reporting. Look at that green box. It's so pristine and shiny and green, even though we never allow for it to be yellow or red because that's a no-no. That's how leaders end up on naughty lists, is if your department falls into the yellow or the red. So no, you're not allowed to tell us that either. No, but it's green. We found zero or near zero. Really? We grow quieter and quieter and quieter. We create silence within our organizations. We create silence. And I say this a lot, but I think that it's important, hence why I say it a whole bunch, is that there's a lot of stuff in our work worlds that should scare us. It does scare us and probably should scare us. I think that's a fair statement. We do some wacky things. We create some wacky products. We have some wacky, but there are things that should scare us. But the thing that should absolutely scare the shit out of us, the thing that should scare us the most within our organizations is silence. Silence should scare the absolute shit out of us. Nothing good ever comes from silence. Never. And anything that creates silence is bad for us, it's bad for our people, and it's bad for our businesses. We have to make that negotiation easier. If you want people to tell you the truth, create an environment in which it's safe for people to tell you the truth. If you want people to report things that go wrong, things that go right, and everything in between, create an environment where they can do just that. Make that negotiation easier. When I'm thinking through that, make it easier. A really good example, you know, I mentioned this with Jarrell, and I'm going to pick on his industry just a little bit here. But it's healthcare, right? You think about human error in healthcare. There was a study that came out some years back, I think 17, 18, somewhere around there, about healthcare human error in healthcare being like the third leading cause of death in the United States. And there was some other stuff that came out saying, well, you can't really prove that, but it's still a problem. Yeah, like even if it's third, if it's fourth, if it's 12th, it's still pretty significant that we would just label human error as a cause. A lot of problems there to unpack, but that's not quite where we're going with this one. There's a quote around that from some testimony to Congress that basically says that the biggest problem with improving those things, improving those error-likely situations, the biggest thing standing in the way of making things better, of making work far easier to go right and harder to go wrong, and on and on. All the stuff that we talk about around these parts here, the biggest thing standing in our way is that we punish people for making mistakes. Yeah, we punish people for making mistakes. So think about how that plays out with reporting. We punish people for making mistakes. We know that if things go wrong, and even when things don't go wrong, we find errors and mistakes. So when I report things, knowing that you're going to find an error or a mistake, because duh, we're humans, you're always going to find errors or mistakes, knowing that I'm going to get punished, it makes me far less likely to report things. Thinking about that in the context that we're discussing this, around healthcare, think about that nurse going into that med room, getting medication out of there, out of these all these little bottles and vials that, while getting better, all look the same and have wacky names that are really hard to remember, maybe same color, same size, and on and on and on. Drawing that medication, administering that medication, only to realize that they administered the wrong medication. Or maybe on a better day, they administered the wrong dose of the right medication. I don't know that that's much better, according to the right medication. That's scary stuff. Of course, that's scary stuff. But now realizing that that nurse's shoes, clogs, a lot of nurses wear clogs. I haven't convinced Jarrell to wear the clogs yet. He thinks the clogs are not cool. For my nursing buddies out there, I'm telling you, I think the clogs look sharp. But I hear not only do they look sharp, but they're super duper comfortable. So if you're on the clog bandwagon, let me know so I can pressure Jarrell to get some of those cool looking nursing clogs. But standing in their tennis shoes or in their fancy nurse clogs or whatever it might be, imagine yourselves truly in their shoes. I've already just been hit with this information that, holy crap, I messed up. I feel guilt. I feel shame. I have this deep sense of responsibility for what happened. I feel embarrassed. I've been doing this for 20 freaking years, and I've never got this wrong. How in the heck did I get it wrong now? And worry not only for myself, but more importantly, almost instantly, worry for my patient. What do I do now? So let's keep going a little bit. Let's say that, okay, patient's fine. No one was hurt, injured, or killed. All is well. Would I report this? Think about what happens next. The medical world is not all that much different than ours, except for one really key thing that I want to highlight here in just a minute. But it can be very punitive. So nothing bad happened. I made an error. I made a mistake. Patient's fine. If I report this, what's going to happen to me? There are a few things that are going to happen. Step number one, I'm going to get interviewed about 47 times in some back office somewhere under a sweat lamp. Maybe just short of being beat with a phone book. You hit people with phone books if you didn't watch old mob movies and stuff, so they don't leave bruises. That's at least the saying in the movies. Right? Yeah. I'm going to get beat with a phone book under a sweat lamp. Interviewed 47 times. And likely, step number two is I'm going to be, at the very least, placed on unpaid administrative leave for an indefinite period of time. Until folks can show that I didn't do anything wrong. There was never an error. There was never a mistake, which is highly unlikely. And knowing this, step 2A is usually fired. Yeah, I'm going to be fired. Now, in our world, most of the time, that's where it stops, which is pretty stinking bad already. You're firing me for something that I didn't intend to do in the first place. You're firing me for a mistake and error when I had the best of intentions, and I don't know how in the heck this happened, and if it could happen to me, it could happen to you, but you're firing me, and now you trusted me for 20 or 30 years doing this, driving that piece of equipment, and now just because I bumped into a bollard once in 20 years, now you don't trust me anymore, and I'm a terrible person. You're shit-canning me and sending me up the street, and I know you're going to say something like, "That was unsafe, and I would rather see you in the unemployment line rather than the back of a hearse." Like, you're going to say something to make you feel better about it and try to convince me that it's for my own good. But that's pretty bad. But in this world, we're going to take this usually a step farther. You're going to get reported to your licensing board. Okay, what does that mean? That means I just spent the last 20 years as a nurse. Not only am I fired, am I in the unemployment line, but maybe, just maybe, they might take my license away. What does that mean? That means that a career, a profession that I probably love and care a ton about and that I'm probably really, really, really stinking good at, because I had one error, one mistake, not only am I going to lose this job, but I'm never likely ever going to be able to work in this profession again. Really? That's step three. Now, back to that idea that there's an extra step here. Two, really, because that's another one. That made three. Step number four. If it was bad enough, I could go to jail. I could not only get fired, humiliated and fired. That's the order. Humiliated, then fired. And not only that, I could lose my license. But not only that, I could end up in jail. But we have a rule that tells you to tell us stuff. So you've got to tell us stuff. So just report stuff. It's the right thing to do. Don't worry about the consequences. Just report stuff. Yeah. Is that creating an environment in which people can tell us the truth? Back to things that I say a lot, and I'm going to say again. Information is just information. We get to decide how we feel about it and what we do with it. Information is not good or bad. It is just information. We cannot operationally learn and improve if people can't share this information with us, if they can't report stuff. We get stuck in that normal blame loop, that blame cycle, right? Where we look for human error or a mistake and we find it because it's always there. Pro tip, it's just as there in successful work. Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, it's still there. But something bad happens. Somebody reports something to us. We look for human error. We look for a mistake. We usually see error or mistake and then call that a violation, an unsafe act. I should have cared more. Should have tried harder. We blame and we punish. We pour disciplinary action down upon the heads of those folks. Again, usually, almost always, punishing them for things that they didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that it'll keep them from doing it again, which makes a whole bunch of sense, yeah? Which results in people not reporting as much stuff. Yeah, so of course people aren't going to tell us stuff. But not only that, the true issues, the true problems, the error-inviting situations, the brittleness, the rules that are too hard to follow, the systems that don't work right, and on and on and on and on. Those problems, those weaknesses within our organizations, they persist. They stay there. And then somebody comes along, and guess what? They have an error. They have a mistake, because that's what we do as people. We stumble upon those things again, and we start that loop all over again. Of course, the output is that people just shut up. Of course, the output is that people start to distrust our organizations. Of course, the output is that we do not learn and we do not improve. Of course, the output is silence. We have to break that chain. We have to break that loop. We have to break that loop. If you want reporting to work well for you in your organization, I'm not telling you that you can't have a rule that says people need to tell you stuff. I'm not even telling you that it shouldn't say or else. What I'm saying is that that's just words on paper, meaningless words on paper. Focus on creating an environment in which people can tell you the truth. Make that negotiation that they're going to have with themselves when things get sideways, make it far easier for them to land on, nope, I want to report this. Reporting problems are rarely, if ever, an individual person problem. They're an organizational issue. They're a beliefs and assumptions issue. They're a we think blame fixes a bunch kind of issues. They're a we'll discipline first and ask questions later kind of issues. They're a I don't care, this just shouldn't ever happen. Errors and mistakes, violations, they're all the same thing in my book. If you have a bad outcome, it's because you're a terrible person. And there are that kind of issues. There are lack of curiosity kind of issues. There are lack of seeking to understand kind of issues. There are issues that are actually within a good bit, at least, of our sphere of control. Just telling people to report more and then going out and beating them when they don't report and then showing them that when they do report, that bad things are going to happen to them anyways. Again, it makes that negotiation more obvious in the wrong direction. It's me going, of course I'm not going to tell you crap. But we get to change that. We can change that. Some tactical kind of tips and ideas that I would share with you here. And I've shared this before, and I'm going to continue to beat this drum because I think it's important. And it's not only important, but everywhere that I go, I see this. And I think it's just, it's vital. It's vital. It's vital to helping us outgrow this blame game. Whatever your post-event something procedure looks like, whatever it looks like, you can rewrite it. I hope you know that. I'm not saying that you're not going to have to get some corporate approval, that you're not going to have to go try to convince a VP. Guess what? That's our job. That's what we do. Of course we have to do that sometimes. Of course we have to go in there and ask 12 times, get told no 12 times, and then number 13, finally we get it to click, and they're going, nope, you're right. Of course. It's worth it. It's worth it. You can change those things. And the thing that I would encourage you to change sooner than later, like right now, today, if you can go rewrite it today, right now, and especially if you don't have to get all that approval, if you own it or you're the approver, move that lever of blame, of disciplinary action, to the end of the procedure. Move it away from the beginning. Just about every one of these procedures that I read, it starts with step one. Did somebody mess up? Was there an error? Was there a mistake? Was there a violation? All the same thing in our book. That means step number two is unpaid administrative leave while we dig into that a little bit more. And step 2A is a shit can you. Yeah. Back to people creating environments where people will not tell you the truth. That's a good way to do that if you do not want to have that information. If you want more information and you want higher quality in your post-event learning somethings, move it to the other side. I'm not even telling you to get rid of it. What I'm telling you to do is seek to understand first, how did this make sense? Start with the assumption that people had a good intent, that they didn't show up to work to cause harm, that they didn't show up to work to give somebody the wrong medication or the wrong dose. They didn't show up to work to back into those bollards. They didn't. We should seek to understand first. We should explore all of that context first. Seek to understand. What we almost always find when we move that disciplinary action something, that lever to the other side of the process, and we start to view it as a last resort option, it starts to be used more where it probably should be used. It starts to be used in, no, wait a second, this was malicious. And what I mean by that is this person intended their actions. They intended for this to be negative. They intended to cause harm. They intended for bad stuff to happen. Yeah, we probably have a textbook person problem. Now my learning is going to shift over to, well, how did we get someone that wanted to cause harm and do bad things? How did they actually get to live in our organization? How did they get here? Right, we'll go down a different path of learning usually at that point. But that is basic step number one. If that lever is on the beginning side of your process, if it's the first thing that we look for, we know we're always going to find it because it's always there. And what we tend to do is we blame, shame, retrain, and then we stop. We don't go much deeper than that. Yeah, because it always seems so clear after the fact, right? With the gift of hindsight, known outcome, having all of the information now available to us, it's if we put that as step one, we have all that basic information. You go, well, duh, they shoulda. They coulda, if only they woulda. And we blame, shame, retrain, pain, discipline, kick, boot out of our organization, and we stop there. It's not useful to us. A disciplinary action should be the very last resort option for us. It should be the nuclear option, right, within our organizations. So move it to the other side of the process. Okay, I beat that one to death. But put some thought into that. Really, really put some thought into that. Structurally, we have a problem. We have a problem with how that plays out in our organizations. And for all the reasons that we said, and if you go back through all the other episodes of me talking about this, you get it even that much better because I kind of rambled that one off. The other thing is around our systems, right? What does reporting look like? Even if we start to get better at how we react, what I mean really is when we move from react to respond, when we start to, and there's two here. There's two here. And this is probably the right place to start with this before I get into the system kind of issues that we run into. We mentioned better beliefs, better assumptions. When we have reaction problems, it's usually because we have underlying belief and assumption problems more than just acute reaction problems. Because as people, we almost always tend to like panic in the immediate sense. And then if our assumptions are a bit better, if we've got those kind of better underlying beliefs collectively, we'll kind of stop that and we'll go, yep, that's a normal feeling. Yep, that's this is mature here, right? Yep, that's a normal feeling to feel worried about that. That's a normal feeling to maybe want to start ripping off heads. But I know that's not valuable, and I have very little information. I have a microscopic amount of information. And if I just go out and start judging people and blaming people with this very little bit of information, I'm likely to be proven to be an ass. Even if it's just for that reason, I'm likely to be wrong. Let's understand first. And if ripping off heads is the answer, okay. But we almost always find that ripping off heads is not the answer. When we start to respond in a bit more of a restorative fashion, those questions that we should ask in the immediate response sense, who's hurt, what do they need, who's responsible for getting them what they need, all right, restorative justice, focus things. And then moving over as we kind of work through that to, okay, now how do we learn? What's the best tool to use here for operational learning to tap into that operational reality, into that context that we need to understand if we want to stand a real chance on making things better? So we've gotten pretty good at that. I'm teeing this up for the system thing. We've gotten pretty good at that. People feel that they can tell us the truth. What I find that tends to lead people to not report so much is it's just a headache. It's a headache. It's more work. So maybe I'm not having that negotiation at this point with myself going 100% chance of blame, shame, retrain, 80% chance of blame, shame, and retrain. I'm going with the 80% option, right? So I'm not going to, maybe I'm not having that conversation nearly as much, but I'm going, okay, I know my organization is going to learn about this. I know they're not going to blame, shame, and retrain me. I know that. I mean, I have this deep sense of responsibility. I'm here to learn. Let's figure this out. I messed it up. Let me help you fix it. That kind of more mature kind of thinking around those things. But I'm looking at it and I'm going, that's a 14-page form, y'all. I ain't got no time. Well, don't worry. We put it online. We've got this fancy pants system. We pay millions of dollars a month for it in licensing fees to use it. And it only takes 47 minutes to submit an event report. Encourage reporting or discourages reporting? Strong discourage. We've got to make it less of a headache. We've got to make it easy. We've got to make it easy. So think about what that looks like in your organization. If you have a 14-page report to submit a near miss, people are going to stop submitting near misses to you. It's just that simple. Even if you got a rule that says they've got to report near misses to you, even if you make it safe for them to tell you the truth, process problem. Yeah, that thing failed, but really, like, nobody was hurt. I know we're not going to get blame, shame, or retrained for it, but this is going to kill, like, today and tomorrow if I report this, and this critical job still has to get done. Am I supposed to do this at home? Like, what's that look like? We found this in an organization that I work for internally where it was just the process. The thing was just wacky. Like, it was a good product. It's just we had added a bunch to it over the years, like all kinds of questions and trend codes and this and that and the other. And everybody that had a bright idea about what should be there, you know, the next silver bullet that if we just trend this or capture that, then we'll have more information. Events will never happen again. It was just painful to do. It was just painful to do. Even when we created that environment, even when people could tell us the truth, when we removed that fear out of reporting, people still didn't want to do it. And they had a good reason for not wanting to do it, is that it would take up at least a solid day of their time. By the time I submit the reports, by the time I field all the phone calls from everyone and their uncle all calling about that particular event, by the time that I dealt with the safety department and the 47 interviews that they were going to put me through, and then the executives want to come hang out with me and then interview me too, and on and on and on and on and on. You've got to clean that process up. You got to make it easy. You got to take the headache out of it. even after you get the fear and anxiety out of the reporting thing out of there, you've still got to make sure that it's the process. The process is sound. It is easy. It is streamlined. It gets you the information that you need to get without putting too big of a burden on the person that is actually submitting it. So good, practical something. A great way to tap into that, to see what that form should look like. Spend time with the folks that had to fill out those forms. Yep. Spend time with those folks that are using that information within your organization. See what it truly is that they need. Ask them. Yeah. Ask those folks. Get those folks together and have that conversation. How can we make this more streamlined? How can we make this a bit easier? Now, there's another thing that I want to put in here, and maybe this is kind of the last bit because I've been rambling on and on and on and on about this one. But it's this, hold on, a little sip of coffee. You can hear my voice kind of going, yeah, the crud is in full effect here. But it's the output side of the equation. So maybe I've removed the fear and anxiety around reporting, and I've made the process easy. There's a nice little handy dandy something. You can do it right over your phone. It takes all of about 3 minutes to put that information in there, and we've got it. You're not going to get interviewed 47 times. In fact, we're probably going to involve you in helping us create what better looks like with us. We're going to learn from you. We're not just going to issue a bunch of stuff to you and say, go do it. We're not going to beat you with that phone book or put you under that sweat lamp. But I take the time and I send it to you. And hey, this is what happened to me. This is what happened to us. And then nothing happens. Fool me once, I might report again. Fool me twice, it's getting less likely. Third time, I'm just going to shut up. I'm just going to shut up. It doesn't make a damn. If I tell you about it, nothing's going to change. You're just going to tell me to try harder. Yeah, you're just going to say, thank you for the information. Reporting is good. More reporting equals more better. And then we don't actually do anything with it. Now, what I see a lot here is that it's not that we actually didn't do anything about it. I find this doing learning explorations all the time where I'll spend time with frontline folks and I'm asking some of these really broad questions, right? Like, how are things going? Teach me about what this looks like. And they'll be like, I've been telling them about this thing for years and they just never do anything with it. And then you spend time with the folks that they've been telling about. They're like, wait a second, we fixed that. Hey, we fixed it. And then you go back and talk to them and they're like, well, yeah, it's a little bit better. Yeah, I didn't know. Actually, yeah. I find a lot of times that we are fixing things. And then we do a shit job of telling people that we're fixing things. Toot your horn. Toot your horn. Toot your horn. Tell the story. Tell the story. When somebody brings you that thing and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good one. Maybe we did some operational learning around it. Maybe we did a learning team. Maybe our event investigation, something took us where we needed to go. Maybe even an RCA or a 5Y took us where we needed to go. And we make things a lot better. We don't tell anybody. We're just like, oh, that's better. Cool. We closed out the action, pat ourselves on the back, and we move on with life. No, you got to tell people. You got to tell people. And if there's a reason, right, if they're like, we need to do this, and you're like, we cannot do that. Silence is never the answer. Back to silence not being good for us. Silence is not good for us here either. Tell that story. This is what we did to improve it. Let us know how that's working for you. If that's not working for you, we're going to keep at it. If it's working well for you, let us know. If that changes, let us know. Hey, we can't do anything with that right now. Here's why. Here's why. Here's what we can do about that right now. It might not be exactly what you were hoping for. Transparency. Openness, communicate, right? Tell that story. When you fix that stuff, toot your horn. Tell it throughout the organization. Because again, even if you got the other parts of this thing right, if people aren't seeing the value, if they're not seeing the output of reporting, it makes things better. It makes things safer. It makes things more efficient. It makes my life easier. And on and on and on and on. I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it because why? Even if you're not going to beat me, blame me, shame me, even if the form takes 2 seconds, I feel like it goes to nowhere. It drifts off into outer space. Somebody puts it on a spreadsheet that we reported stuff. Maybe it helps somebody else with their bonus, and our life still sucks. Not going to do it. So there you go. there are some really key ideas, and not all of them. There's so much that we can unpack in this one. We'll have to come back to maybe a part two or a part three of this at a later date when my voice is not about to go out. You can hear it. It's going out, which is bad. I hope that it's not out right now because I'm in North Carolina when you're listening to this talking about HOP and operational learning. that would be very, very bad. But those are some things that are near and dear to my heart and some things that, again, I hope some practical things that you can just go tweak, tune, and change within your organization right now. Again, I think the last thing I want to leave you with is right where I started. All reporting is voluntary. You can demand that people tell you stuff. That doesn't mean they're going to. It does not work that way. I have a choice in the matter. What you get to do, what you should be focused on, is creating an environment where I can tell you the truth, taking out the fear and the anxiety. I'm already scared enough. Shit already hit the fan. Make it easy. Make it easy for me to tell you the truth, knowing that when I tell you the truth, that it's not going to result in 47 pages of paperwork for me, that it's not going to result in 20 interviews, a sweat lamp, and a phone book beating. That when I tell you this stuff, that I'm coming to you, you're going to help me. And only help me in this acute post-event sense. But by me doing this, we're going to work together to make sure that it's really hard for this to happen to somebody else. You get those things right, you won't have too much of a reporting problem. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.